Peter Sagal here. Now, I enjoy hosting Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I do. But it is my honor to serve as the official taste tester for How to Do Everything, our sister podcast from our producers Mike Danforth and Ian Shillog. It's part advice show, part survival guide, and part giving me really interesting things to taste. For example, homemade taco-flavored gin.
I promise you.
Yes.
That this is not in any way going to... It's probably not going to hurt you.
Right.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't hurt you.
Did you just go? Did you just downgrade the promise? Because you started
I did.
By saying I promise,
I
and
did.
Then you qualified it with probably.
This has not been designed to cause you pain.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That said, don't take a gulp.
Right.
Take a sip.
Take a sip. All right.
Oh, that's pretty bad. That's awful.
Oh God.
The liqueur known as Malort.
Oh.
That is so awful. That is, oh my God, I had forgotten how awful it is. What, that is, oh God.
You can find How to Do Everything on iTunes or at npr.org/podcasts.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm the only man to make Janet Yellen raise her interest rate, Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you. Great to be here with you. We are proud of the show we have prepared for you today. Of course, we're going to be talking about Wednesday's Republican presidential debate, which fortunately for us just ended minutes ago. But later on, we'll be talking to Mr. Tom Ricketts. He is the owner and the CEO of the Chicago Cubs. We're going to talk to him about how in just a few years, he took a team of lovable losers and transformed them into a group of lovable people who don't lose quite so much. We here have a championship to celebrate every week, so why not give it a try? The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Steve Barrios from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing well, sir, doing well.
Well, and what do you do there in Baton Rouge?
I am a world history teacher at an all-girls private school here in Baton Rouge.
Yes. And you never thought you'd be calling and writing to us, but the most amazing thing... I'm sorry, that's a terrible thing. And how do you find that work?
Oh, I love it. It's a great job. I've been there for about 8 years now. I mean, I get to talk history and play with technology all day. It's a fantastic job.
Well, Steve, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, as a writer and performer, it's Mr. Peter Gross.
Hello. How are you?
Next, it's the woman who writes the syndicated advice column Ask Amy, appearing in the Chicago Tribune. It's Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Steve.
And making his debut on our panel, we're pleased to welcome a comedian who will be performing at the Funny Bone in Toledo, Ohio, on September 24th through the 27th. It's Mr. Adam Burke. So, you, of course, are going to start us off, Steve, with Who's Bill This Time? Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, of course, identify or explain just two of them. We give you a mulligan on one of them.
Okay.
Do that, and you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail. You ready to do this?
Absolutely.
Here, Steve, is your first quote.
If I were sitting at home and watching this, I would be inclined to turn it off.
That was a quote from one of the participants in what big television event on Wednesday night?
Got to be the Republican debate.
It was. That was John Kasich, who was on stage expressing his opinion. The second GOP primary debate was held in the Ronald Reagan Library right next to Reagan's old Air Force One. That is why CNN had record ratings for the debate. People tuned in so excited because they thought that after months and months of promotion, CNN had finally found that missing plane.
And wasn't, like, Bernie Sanders live-tweeting it, and he
Bernie
finally
Sanders,
just gave up?
He gave
like,
Bernie whatever. Sanders tried to live-tweet it and then just fell asleep with his cup of milk.
But don't you think with the airplane in the background, didn't that make it look like some sort of giant game show? Like that was the prize
yes.
at the back?
Yeah. Like, if that was it, nobody would have left the stage. If the prize was you can win Reagan's plane. They would have
right. Now, everybody tuned in, I think, anyway, to see Donald Trump. And the first thing Trump said, when given the chance, the question was whether or not he could be trusted with the nuclear codes. He said, quote, well, first of all, Rand Paul shouldn't even be on this stage.
I know, I love that.
As the first thing out of his mouth, he's not running for president, he's running for Don Rickles.
Yeah. No, he was, and actually I stayed up and stayed through all 3 hours because I was enjoying that beautiful chemistry, really, between Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina. It was like, yeah. I was like, get a room, you two.
Get a room already.
Get a room.
It was like, it's like the Sam and Diane of Republican politics.
Yeah, really? It is, we will agree with the other Republicans that it is a concern about Donald Trump getting his hands on nuclear weapons. On the other hand, in the case of a Trump presidency, a nuclear holocaust is really our best option. Here, Steve, we'll move on to more important things. Here is your next quote.
Not every moment is a good moment.
That was Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook CEO, talking about why his company, Facebook, is going to debut what?
Dislike.
Yes, the dislike button. With a dislike button to go with the famous like button. Finally, Facebook will allow us to express all two emotions human beings have. It's a little late for this. I mean, YouTube has a dislike option in the comments. Tinder has swipe left. Etsy just has the sad reminder that you're spending your time on Etsy.
Etsy has, like, cat sweaters or something.
Yes, I know. Yeah. This is really big news because up until now, you really have no way of expressing distaste on Facebook other than punching the screen, which is expensive in both medical costs and new computers. But now, soon, you'll be able to press dislike. So Facebook will instantly become a mess of undifferentiated rage.
Yeah. There's already so much rage.
I don't
rage
know
out
if we're
there.
Ready for, to lose the untrammeled wave of positivity that is
yeah,
Facebook.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, actually,
it's already like it's like the green river of slime under the city in Ghostbusters.
Right, right.
You know, where they're like, that's all the anger and stuff. Like, it's all just on Facebook now.
You know what's interesting is that they say that they're going to do this. Facebook has been around for a decade, but they're going to do this finally, but they're still not ready. It's going to take some months because Facebook engineers haven't quite figured out how to turn the thumb up 180 degrees. All right, Steve, here is your last quote.
I thought they'd be impressed by it.
That was a 14-year-old boy named Ahmed Muhammad who sadly was quite wrong about the reaction when he brought what to school?
A homemade clock.
Yes, indeed, his clock. Like all 14-year-old boys, Ahmed likes to sit around by himself in dark rooms and tinker. So as a way of making an impression in the first few weeks of high school, he made a homemade digital clock and brought it to school, and his plan worked. Now everybody knows who he is. Ahmed was questioned by police, handcuffed, and suspended for 3 days. Why? Because they kept asking him what it was, and he kept saying, it's a clock, and couldn't offer, in the words of the police, a, quote, broader explanation. Something like, you know, it's a clock, you morons. So in Texas,
it's a clock for telling time with.
Yes.
Yeah, so, okay, so time is linear, and it starts.
Yes. It'd be great if
every
you sat
time
there.
This number goes up, another minute has passed.
Right.
And we're closer to death.
They're arresting in Texas a 14-year-old boy essentially because he would not speak in detail at length. We do not have enough prisons in this country to hold all the teenagers who will not talk to you. You know. And I'm sure Ahmed is a very nice kid, but you know, he got home from what must have been the worst day of school that anybody has ever had. And his parents said, so, how was school? And he was like,
okay. But you know what? It's also like the cops have only seen, like, James Bond movies from the 80s.
Right.
Yeah, or like Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons.
Right, because they think that this is a bomb-like thing.
Well, I am going to be, I don't know where this puts me, but I will tell you that I saw, you know, this thing exploded on social media.
Wrong word.
Yep.
Too soon.
Yep. Absolutely.
And And I'm like, this is terrible. This 13-year-old kid brings a clock to school, and they think he's like a bomber. And then they tweeted a picture of his clock, which was in a case with lots of wires leading right. hither and to. And I'm like, that kind of looks like a bomb. And it really didn't help that the way Ahmed designed it is you're like, when the alarm goes off, you stop it by snipping the green wire.
I like that the foreign press is referring to him as Clock Boy, which is, it just sounds like an incredibly punctual superhero. Yeah.
It's like, when will Clock Boy? Oh, he's here. That's right. Bill, how did Steve do on our quiz?
Perfect score.
That's great.
Congratulations. Well done, Steve.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Amy, a new scourge of our youth.
A scourge.
Parents are apparently reporting that thousands of their children are addicted to what?
They're addicted to thousands of children are. Can you give me a little size?
Some of them also, it's a gateway drug that often leads to flossing.
Mouthwash?
No, not mouthwash.
Toothbrushing?
Toothbrushing, brushing their teeth.
Really?
Yeah, I
would like to meet those young people.
Well, let me explain. The hardest thing about being a parent, other than bailing your son out of jail for building a clock, is making sure your kids brush their teeth, right? We all know this. But Philips has this new electric toothbrush that syncs with a game on a tablet. So brushing the teeth is a way to win points.
Oh, my God.
So it's great. Dental care routine becomes a life or death game. Brush with me if you want to live.
So, like, the action of brushing your teeth is, like, moves the character
yeah,
around
exactly.
on the game?
I mean, I don't know if they actually look at the pad while they're doing it, but the more you brush in each quadrant of your mouth, the more points you get and you advance
that
the goals.
That is just going to lead to nothing good. Lots of, like, bloody gums.
Well, yeah. That's what's happening.
The kids are going to walk in and be like, I got a perfect score. I can't talk.
Well, this is what's happened, is apparently parents are complaining. Their kids are constantly brushing their teeth.
Oh,
they're abrading their gums. Some of them are, like, bringing their toothbrushes with them to school to get extra points. This
oh
could lead
God.
To overbrushing, tooth problems, or worse, somebody coming up with a similar approach for toilet training. It's a great toothbrush for meth addicts.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, yeah, I understand you're a meth addict, but your teeth look so great. That's unusual for a meth addict. What's your secret? Says, well, I'm not just addicted to meth.
What a well-spoken meth addict you've created.
Well,
sir, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Coming up, our panelists make a shocking discovery that is on fleek. It's our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Bleecker Street, presenting Pawn Sacrifice, the untold story of Bobby Fischer, the Cold War, and the match of the century, starring Tobey Maguire, Liev Schreiber, and Peter Sarsgaard. Now playing.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We are playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Adam Burke, and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Emily. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Los Angeles?
They're beautiful. It rained the other day, too, so it feels great out here.
I understand were you guys worried about a tsunami? Was that happening this week?
Yeah, off the coast of Chile. We were feeling some reverberations from that on the coast, but I think everything's okay.
But no tsunami?
Not as far as I know.
Dang. Well, welcome to the show, Emily. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Emily's topic?
Thou art most awesome sauce.
So, we tend to think of certain words as very much part of our present culture. But this week we learned that a certain word or phrase dates back much further than previously thought. Our panel is going to tell you about it. So your job is to pick the one that is telling the truth, and you will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your voicemail. Are you ready to do this?
I'm so ready.
Let's then. First, let's hear from Amy Dickinson.
A small team of academics from Georgetown University were researching the impact of cowardice on historical events when they found this phrase popping up in surprising places. It's not you, it's me. Sure, we all know that Jerry Seinfeld said it, and Brad Pitt said it to Jennifer Aniston just before he became Brangelina. But did you know that Brutus said it to Julius Caesar? Sus vobis ego sum, he whispered just before the stabbing. In Latin. Cleopatra wrote this in a note, which she had a minion deliver to Mark Antony. Most surprisingly, the researchers uncovered an early draft of the Declaration of Independence, which began, "We hold this truth to be self-evident. Great Britain, it's not you, it's us." The research team got so excited about their findings that they decided to test the impact of the phrase in their own lives. And now, 10 months later, all of the researchers have left their jobs in academia. Two are campaigning for Donald Trump, and one is working for Roger Goodell. Their book, It Really Isn't Me, It's You, comes out this fall.
It's Not You, It's Me goes back much further than the recent book about dating. Your next story of a new phrase with an ancient past comes from Peter Grove.
Being a word historian can often be a boring job, right up there with being an accountant or James Carville's barber. But sometimes you do something fun, like discovering the origins of a curse word. Now, since the word I will be discussing is a four-letter word beginning with F that you can't say on non-Howard Stern radio shows, I'm going to use a substitute word that's basically as close as we can get without getting in trouble. See if you can catch it. This week, Dr. Paul Booth, a historian at Keele University in England, found what just may be the earliest reference dating from the year 1310 of the word fork, which is, again, not the actual word. The reference is to a man known in legal documents as, quote, Roger Forked by the Navel. Dr. Booth said he thinks this man, who historians believe constantly insisted that everyone just call him Roger, was not burdened by the worst family name in history, but rather he was given the name as an insult. This surname is presumably a nickname, Dr. Booth told the website medievalists.net, a site devoted to Middle Ages history, not Mike Huckabee's views on gay marriage. Booth thinks the nickname could actually refer to an attempt at fornication by the inexperienced young Roger, who chose the navel as his, let's say, point of entry with a young lady. The embarrassing episode may have later been reported by Roger's confused and presumably very dissatisfied girlfriend, which led to the unfortunate nickname. So, the next time someone cuts you off in traffic and you're tempted to scream, "Fork you!" try yelling, "You are the type of person who would attempt to copulate with someone's belly button." It's a lot longer, but still historically accurate.
So the F-bomb, if it were, going back much, much further than we thought. And your last story of a modern phrase not being so modern comes from Adam Burke.
To anyone who has spent hours burning their retinas out in front of Netflix or Hulu, it's a term that's all too familiar. Binge watch. However, while that particular practice is a newer phenomenon, it seems the term has been around for some time, although with a different connotation. As the phrase was being submitted for consideration for a recent update to the Oxford English Dictionary, junior editor Reynold Cox pointed out the phrase binge watch, translated from the Latin gula vigilia, has existed for centuries, and once referred to the ancient Roman practice of appointing a person at feasts and orgies to ensure that people didn't overindulge. i.e., a designated binge watcher. The first known use was found on a terracotta tablet looking for people willing to perform odd or peculiar jobs in exchange for gold or salt, which historians called an early, less gross version of Craigslist. By the 18th century, the English version of the idiom was popular enough to prompt the poet Alexander Pope to include it in a humorous rhyming couplet to his friend William Congreve, advising him to watch his intake of food and wine. Unless to your belt you'd fain add a notch, I'd deign to serve as a vigilant binge watch.
All right, one of these words or phrases goes back much further in time than we thought. Was it from Amy Dickinson? It's not you, it's me. That classic breakup line. Turns out Brutus used it on Caesar. From Peter Gross, well, the most familiar F-bomb, which we thought was fairly modern, but isn't, going back to the 14th century. Or from Adam Burke, the phrase binge watch, originally meant, you know, somebody watching someone binge. Which of these is the real story of a interesting discovery in the world of language?
It's a tough one, but I think I'm going to have to go with Adam's story about binge watching.
Really? You're going to go to Adam's story about how binge watching originally meant watching someone binge so as to make sure they were doing it well? Well, we actually spoke to the researcher who actually made this discovery.
A couple of weeks ago, I very unexpectedly came across a man with a very, very unusual name, Roger by the navel.
Yeah, amazingly, they also had bleeps in the early 14th century. That was Paul Booth, a retired senior lecturer at the University of Liverpool, talking about his four-letter discovery. All right, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news, of course, is that you didn't win. Adam fooled you with his, I thought, very charming story about binge watching. The real story was obviously Peter's. The good news is, first, that you won a point for Adam for being, shall we say, convincing, and that you now know if you ever use foul language like that, you can point out, oh, no, no, I'm using historically accurate English. Emily, thank you for playing our game.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we ask knowledgeable people about things they know nothing about. It's called Not My Job. Chicago is a huge and diverse city with all kinds of people speaking dozens of languages. But one thing that unites us all is our love for a sports team, one that represents the spirit of this city. I'm talking, of course, about the Chicago Bears. Meanwhile, there's another very popular team called the Chicago Cubs. And Tom Ricketts is that club's owner. Tom Ricketts, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Now, just so we understand the story, for many years, the Cubs was owned by the Tribune Company, publishers of the Chicago Tribune, and, right. And you and your family decided to buy it. And why the Cubs? You couldn't afford a winning team.
No, the Cubs are really close to our heart. I mean, we're all, all my siblings and I are big Cubs fans, and there was really no other sports team we cared about.
So you're from Nebraska, we know, but you've always been a Cubs fan. We understand you even met your wife at Wrigley Field. Is that right?
That's 100% true. We used to sit in the center field bleachers pretty much every Saturday and Sunday all through the summers. And I was at a game one afternoon, and we're just sitting next to some girls who were talking about Omaha because they went to college there.
Yeah.
And actually, we used to sit in the same spot in center field every game because before the tyranny of the two-beer limit, you could buy as many beers as you wanted. So we would send one guy down with all the money, and he could hand them straight up to us in center field.
I'm sorry,
to
interrupt.
Strategy,
did you just
Peter.
Refer to the two-beer limit?
Yeah.
What you mean by that is you can buy two beers at once when
right.
you go to the stand.
Correct, correct.
And
per person.
After I can't help but note that you actually own the team.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do away with that ridiculous rule, you could wave your scepter and it would be...
Over the years, how many drunk Cubs fans have there been who yelled at a vendor, oh yeah, well one of these days I'm going to own this place and...
So, but that's incremental. I totally buy it. So you met your wife, you started having beers with her.
Yep.
And did you actually sit there and say to yourself, someday I'm going to own this place?
No, not at all.
Really?
Actually, in my business school application,
yeah.
it asked for your dream job.
Yeah.
And I wrote down owning Major League Baseball team.
No.
It's a true story.
Oh,
true story.
Wow.
But which one did you want to own?
Yeah. Well, at the time we lived above the Sports Corner bar, right across the street from the ballpark. So it was kind of front of the lobe.
You lived above the Sports Corner? Between the L and
yeah,
Sheffield
and Addison.
I had improv team rehearsals there for like 3 years or something like that. Not in your apartment, but in the... In the sports
Wait,
bar.
So you bought the Cubs just because it was a convenient commute?
Here's the thing I don't understand. I love baseball. I would love to be a team owner maybe someday if this public radio thing hits it. But But I'm just trying to imagine you. You're living in Wrigleyville. And for those who have never been to a Cubs game, they're great. It's a great field. But after the game, the neighborhood is filled for hours and hours with the most obnoxious drunk people. And you're like, I want this.
Those are not obnoxious drunk people. Those are passionate.
There you go. Well done. I want to go back to something you said. You said that you put, and this is your business school application, so obviously you're a grown man, but you wrote down that your dream job is to own a baseball team, or the Cubs specifically. Yeah, right. When I was a kid, my dream job was to play baseball. Did you have that dream? Did you want to be a player at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely as a kid. And then, you know how it goes. You get to be 12 or 13, and some of the other kids get bigger and hairier. Yeah.
And you say
next thing you know, you're captain of the debate team.
Yeah.
Got to play the cards you're dealt.
This is public radio. We know about that. I do want to ask you about your interactions with fans, because Chicago has a pretty rabid fan base. You must have had at least the occasional moment in time.
Honestly, 100% honest. Like, I walk through the park just about every single game. And I've had almost no issues with people. There's a few people that, you know, once in a while they just misunderstand something about, like, why they can't hear the radio in the bathroom or why beer costs $9 or something like that. But, generally it's been great.
Why does beer cost $9?
why does a starting pitcher cost $25 million?
I guess that's a better question. Wrigley, of course, is famous for its old, shall we say, fashion style, including the urinal troughs. Do you, as the owner, do you have like a luxury gold trough in your suite?
You know, I don't, but I like that idea.
Just for you, like 10 feet of urinal trough, just for you and your friends.
You just made beer cost $10 next
year. Yeah.
Way to go, Sagal.
Tom Ricketts, we are so delighted to talk to you. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Wave to the left, wave to the right, and don't fall off the float.
So you are the owner of the Chicago Cubs. And since we wanted to ask you about something you don't know anything about, we thought we'd ask you about celebratory parades. Answer two of these three questions correctly. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice in their voicemail. Bill, who is Tom Ricketts playing for?
Thomas Foster of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
All right, here's your first question.
Yeah.
You may be familiar with the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's a championship that has been won numerous times in recent years by a team here in Chicago. One of the great things about the Cup is that the winning players in each hockey team that wins it gets to take it home. In 2008, a Red Wings player did what with it? A, he pawned it to buy a really sweet new Fender electric bass. B, he put his baby daughter inside it, where she promptly pooped. Or C, he filled it full of Red Bull, drank the whole thing, and was then hospitalized for taurine poisoning.
Wow. You know, I imagine that number three's happened more than once, so I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, the daughter. That's exactly what happened. He had a baby daughter, put her in the cup. She immediately did what babies do, and don't worry, he says he had it cleaned. All right, that's very good. Just weeks ago, sprinter Usain Bolt was celebrating his win in the 100 meters at the World Championships with his victory lap around the stadium when what happened? A, a photographer plowed into him, knocking him flat with his Segway. B, a little bottle of steroids fell out of his pocket. Or C, he stopped halfway around, calmly vomited, then kept going.
I think Bolt's too cool to throw up. I'm going to take A.
You're going to take A? He was knocked over by a Segway?
Yeah.
You're right! Okay, here's your last question. We'll see if you can go for perfect. In 2002, the town of Lauderhill, Florida, held a Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. They didn't entirely nail all the details, though. What went wrong? A, the banners they put up all read, "Thank you, Marty." B, all the pictures they used of Martin Luther King Jr. were actually just of Martin Luther. Or C, they presented a plaque to actor James Earl Jones, but the plaque read, "Thank you, James Earl Ray."
No. No. No.
Wow. All those are bad.
No.
That would ruin a lot of celebratory parades. No. I'll take C.
You're going to take C. I'm glad that you somehow knew we would never dare to make that up. That is, in fact, what happened. They presented him a plaque, and they looked down like, oh, my God, the organizers felt really, 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 really bad about that. Bill, how did Tom Ricketts do in our quiz?
You know, he did just like the Cubs are going to do for the rest of the season.
There we go.
Perfect. Perfect. Tom Ricketts is the owner and chairman of the perhaps future world champion Chicago Cubs. Yeah. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. In just a minute, Bill drinks several toasts to the Pope in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
We would like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid trips to the post office. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your computer. 500,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, use the promo code WAIT, that's W-A-I-T, for a special offer. A 4-week trial, plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in WAIT, W-A-I-T. Thanks.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We are playing this week with Adam Burke, Peter Gross, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Bill introduces the Cubs chairman of rhyme, Tom Limerickets. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, the paleo diet helps people pretend that they're better than everyone else by encouraging them to eat like our ancestors by cutting out starches and grains. There's only one problem, though, as new evidence has shown what?
I am currently on that diet, so you had better tell me, Buster. What? Well, I know you don't lose weight. Or maybe it's just me. There's a flaw.
Yes, and what is that flaw?
That, I mean, maybe they did know how to go. Are you telling me I can have starches?
Well, so you could have starches because it turns out that who else likes starches?
Cavemen.
Yes, cavemen love starches and grains, it turns out.
Of course they did. Everybody does. No, well, this diet.
Amy, this diet seems to be making you a little punchy.
Yeah,
I am irritated. It makes you enraged. I feel like I could
like
go.
Like cave rage?
Club,
exactly.
Cave rage. Like I could
a real
go
Neanderthal right
club
now.
Someone over the head and drag them
back
around.
To a cave.
Yeah.
So
truly.
Did they discover like a really old Twinkie factory?
Yeah.
They discovered an old...
Well, it turns out, remember that cave they found those ancient hominids in that we talked about last week? Turns out that cave was a Panera Bread. But new evidence seems to indicate that early man loved grains. They made flour and they made primitive breads when they could get it. More shockingly, some cavemen even insisted on pronouncing it croissant before being immediately clubbed to death by other cavemen.
But you know what? Every time I tell somebody I'm on this diet and like there's no alcohol, people always say things like, oh, no, cavemen drank a lot of wine. Like, people are always telling me what cavemen did. Yeah. Like,
they did drink wine, and that was a great year, 47,000 B.C. Oh, what a vintage.
Adam, the mayor of Louisville wanted to let the world know that he was really pleased with a front-page story in the local newspaper, so he tweeted out a picture. Unfortunately, he also let the world know what?
So he probably included something else in the photo.
Inadvertently. Yeah. You might want to sit down and think about this.
Oh, I see. Okay. He was in session, as they say. He was...
who says that? Who says that?
La-di-da!
He was, you know, taking it in his chambers, as judges say.
Oh, go on. More euphemisms.
He was, yeah, he was at repose. He was on the bog. He was on the loo.
You know, I just want you to know, Adam.
Listen,
you're right.
Learned.
Give him a bell. You're right. Yeah. But you could have said anything.
Yeah.
And we would have bought it. It's like, oh, in Northern Ireland,
yeah,
we
yeah.
say, you know,
sure, yeah.
he was like hunting the forest for the wild weasel.
Exactly.
You know, and we're like, okay.
Sure.
So you are the mayor of Louisville, a great city, and you see a nice positive story about one of your initiatives. And, of course, you can't wait to stand up and pull up your pants to tweet it. The pic clearly shows what looks like a tile floor and the walls of a stall, plus a tattered copy of Steve Inskeep's book about Andrew Jackson. No, it's great bathroom reading. Unfortunately, because of this, the good news about Louisville's civic initiative in the tweet was quickly forgotten, and the first reply to the mayor on Twitter was from somebody with the handle at Oh Holy Butt, and the tweet was, and the tweet was, "Are you pooping?" Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you would like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always click the Contact Us link at our website. That's waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out our sister podcast, How to Do Everything, this week, Mike and Ian, meow meow, about bark bark, cluck cluck. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Catherine Johnson calling from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Hey, Catherine, how are things in New Orleans?
Oh, it's beautiful, hot, as usual.
As usual. Well, what do you do there?
I am a behavioral therapist. I work with kids with autism spectrum disorder.
Oh, well, that's very good. I'm glad you said that, you clarified that, because I didn't think there was any work for therapists in New Orleans because nobody there I know wants to get better. Well, welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you.
You're going to play the game in which Bill Curtis is going to perform for you three news-related limericks. Your job, of course, you've heard this. Finish that limerick. Do it two times out of three, you'll win our prize. You ready
Excellent.
To do it?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm ready.
Here's your first limerick.
Both heroes and villains give shape to a garment that's easy to drape. Let's have some men's fashion that brings out our passion. It's time that we brought back the...
Cape.
Yes,
cape
the
is.
Cape. Very good. Do you crave the full body coverage of a trench coat but don't want to look like a flasher? Well, good news. The cape is making a comeback if Antonio Banderas has his way. He, of course, is known for playing Zorro and Puss in Boots, and now he wants to be Puss in Boots and a cape. He is actually going to go to fashion school and wants to resurrect the cape.
Okay, no man will ever wear a cape. I'm sorry.
That is
no.
not true.
How dare you slap?
I take that as an insult. Every man will wear a cape.
That is,
and women will fall at their feet.
That is amazing. That is such a man move to want to learn the simplest garment to make.
Yes.
It is an amount of fabric
right.
that
yeah.
you put over your shoulders. That Look is. What I've designed.
You take a sheet and you, you kind of cut it.
But, like, what's special about this cape?
I'm quoting Mr. Banderas. For me, it's actually easier than a coat. You just walk into a place and you just, boom, throw it on. He has explosive claps. So.
Is anyone else tired of the complication of a coat?
Here is your next limerick.
This prime minister weathered attacks, but this recent vote gave me the axe. So when I resigned, I used the phone line. My notice was sent in by...
fax?
Yes, by fax. Very good. People are not applauding because they don't know what a fax is. Things are different. In Australia, the toilets flush counterclockwise. They're obsessed with the size of their knives, and the prime minister still uses a fax machine. This week, Aussie PM Tony Abbott skipped the face-to-face resignation and instead faxed his resignation letter to the Governor General. It is possible, in fact, that Mr. Abbott resigned as many as 16 years ago because no one has even looked at the fax machine since 1999.
In his defense, the Governor General's pager wasn't working.
That's true. Here is your last limerick.
The Pope didn't give us a snub, y'all. Let's have a big drinking and grub haul. We will show who we are with a trek bar to bar. We will mark the event with a...
Pub crawl,
yes, a pub crawl.
How smart you are, Catherine.
Pope Francis is visiting Philadelphia at the end of the month, and they are welcoming him in the most Philadelphia way possible, short of clubbing him in the knee and stealing his cassock. It's the Pope crawl. Terrible Catholics, young and old, will hit 18 pubs chugging Bud Light, Bud of Christ. Because remember, if you can't remember it, you don't have to confess it.
Now the Pope,
it's like,
he can wear a cape.
That's the guy who can wear a cape.
He can wear a cape. He's all about
that's
it.
Awesome. Bill, how did Catherine do in our quiz?
Perfect. 3-0.
That's very almost good. Well done.
Almost never.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Huge. It's huge.
Thank you, Catherine, and let the good times roll.
Thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Peter has 2. AB and Adam each have 3.
All right. Well, Peter,
seems low for me.
It does seem low.
Let's do it.
All right. Peter, you are up first as Wonderful. You are in third place. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. Following a 2-day policy meeting, the Federal Reserve announced on Thursday that they would not raise blank.
The interest rates.
Right. This week, firefighters continued to battle a massive wildfire that's destroyed over 1,000 homes in blank.
California.
Right. NBC announced this week that blank would replace Donald Trump as the host of Celebrity Apprentice.
Oh, what's his name? Oh, yeah. The other Joker. Schwarzenegger.
Right. Arnold Schwarzenegger. A man in San Antonio is being held in a local prison after being caught blanking by a grocery store security camera.
Doing something with the vegetables.
No, shoving... Shoving $100 worth of steaks down his pants, and yes, he is a repeat offender. This week, former 76er and NBA Hall of Famer blank passed away at the age of 60.
Moses Malone.
Right. In a new memoir, the former director of the Nobel Institute says that he regrets awarding blank the Nobel Peace Prize.
Barack Obama.
Indeed. Last week, the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, announced his solution to the city's pothole problem was blank.
More potholes!
No. The solution to the city's pothole problem, he thought, was prayer. Mayor Tony Yarber of Jackson, Mississippi, had run out of options to fix the city's crumbling infrastructure, so he tweeted out, "Yes, I believe we can pray the potholes away."
I like the more potholes solution, because if you just lower the rest,
yeah,
of the
everything,
street.
Bring that down to the, right. the level of the
yeah,
hole.
Eliminate
the hole.
All the space that's not a pothole. Right. Pretty yeah. soon everything's even again.
Yeah, it's just like negative space, positive exactly. space like type that. Of thing. Yeah.
Bill, how did Peter do on our quiz?
Peter got 5 right, 10 more points. He now has 12 and the lead.
All right. Now, Adam and Amy are tied, but as a new panelist, I'm just going to give Adam the choice as a courtesy to decide whether you want to go second or third.
Ladies first.
All right.
That Adam, sounds like a gentleman who should wear a cape.
Yeah, I know. I'm having it tailored.
Adam has graciously allowed Amy to go first. So, Amy, over 1 million people were forced from their homes on Wednesday as an 8.3 magnitude earthquake struck blank.
Chile.
Right. On Thursday, Senate Republicans failed to pass their final attempt to derail blank.
The Iran nuclear deal?
Right. Intelligence analysts reported this week that senior military officers willfully exaggerated the U.S.'s progress in the war against blank.
ISIS.
Right. On Thursday, the president and prime minister of blank were overthrown in a military coup.
Burkina Faso?
Right. A woman who was arrested for driving drunk and against traffic in the Holland Tunnel provided a perfectly good explanation by saying blank.
I was drunk.
No, she said that she did not want to go to New Jersey. This week, Apple announced that the new blank had already broken pre-sale records.
The new iPhone.
Right. On Sunday, Novak Djokovic defeated Roger Federer to win his second blank title.
U.S. Open.
Right. Canadian police who heard a woman calling for help over an apartment intercom broke down the door and found blank.
Oh. Okay. She, it was a cape malfunction.
No, when the police broke down the wall, they found that the woman calling for help was actually a parrot named Gobbler calling for help. After hearing cries for help coming from an apartment intercom, a man in Ontario called the police, who broke down the door to the apartment and discovered a talking bird.
But wait, the...
And then the firefighter came in, and the bird's like, ha-ha, made you do it.
Bill, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy got 6 right, 12 more points, 15 in the lead.
Whoa. All right, now if Adam here won this thing on his debut, it would be impressive. How many does he need to do that?
6 to tie and 7 to win.
All right, Adam.
Can he do it?
We'll find out because, Adam, this is for the game. On Tuesday, Hungary closed off the main land route into Europe being used by the refugees from blank.
Syria.
Right. On Thursday, no one in a South Carolina neighborhood was around to stop a home robbery because they were all at a blank.
Barbecue.
No, at a neighborhood watch meeting. On Sunday... On Sunday, Georgia's Betty Cantrell was crowned the new blank.
Head of the Betty Cantrell Fan Association.
No, the new Miss America. This week, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos announced that his company, Blue Origin, would begin launching private blanks from Cape Canaveral.
Space rockets.
Yes, a Norwegian man who was fed up with the dispute about his neighbor's house sticking over into his land just went ahead and blanked.
Moved to Finland.
No, he sawed off the half of the house that was on his property. Some would say that the moral of the story is that good fences make good neighbors. But we think the moral is, if you're sitting next to Arnie Vigeland on a plane, do not hog the armrest. Bill, did Adam do well enough to win?
Well, for a newbie, he got 2 right. 4 more points, total to 7. That means Amy is the winner this week.
Well done. Done like a boss, Amy. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict the first Facebook post to be officially disliked with that new button.
This podcast and the following message are made possible by Travelzoo. Travelzoo, recommending the best travel, entertainment, restaurant, and spa deals to more than 27 million people worldwide. Whether you're at home or on the road, use the promo code WAIT, that's WAIT, at checkout on the Travelzoo app to get $5 towards any restaurant, spa, or activity voucher deal in September. Download the Travelzoo app to redeem it.
Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. This week, we welcome our brand new intern, Candace Spunky Mattel. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Les Dolarchik at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Robin Lynn and Miles Dornbos. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Indiana. Production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be that first Facebook post to get the official dislike treatment? Peter Gross.
The first Facebook post to get that dislike treatment will be whatever your mom posts.
Adam Burke.
The introduction of a meh button. Animated waving hand where we can express complete indifference to half the crap on Facebook.
And Amy Dickinson.
The dinner you just made in your crock pot. What? That's my answer.
Well, if any of those posts get disliked, we'll tell you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Adam Burke, Amy Dickinson, and Peter Gross. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sager. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.